Welcome to Vader Podcast Studio Confessions.
Yes.
Yes.
We are here, the first ever one, right?
Yeah, right. The first one. And with me is Mr. Max Hellier, guitarist extraordinaire from You, Me at Six, and songwriter.
Yes, definitely. Well, one could say, yes, one has been doing it for quite a while now.
You've been making records for over half of your life.
Yeah, it's pretty mad, right?
That is pretty mad.
I'm currently 33, going to be 34 soon, and started playing music at like 12, I would say.
12?
Yeah, 12, got into some bands.
How old were you when you first recorded?
How old I was first recording, so that would have been later on, I think. It was with You, Me at Six.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the early days of You, Me at Six. It started in 2005. So anywhere 2005, 2006 would have been the first time we walked into studios, which was called Stakeout Studios with Jason. And, you know, that was an experience to walk into somewhere you're going to go and record your tracks for the first time as a 16-year-old guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of growing up, and we're just emulating bands as well. Just like practicing our songwriting, practicing like, okay, cool, what do we learn? How do we get inspiration from things? How do other bands who turn around and write their parts and jam those songs out for a bit? So it was a really cool experience. Like, it was quite industrial, small kitchen, I remember, at Stakeout at the time, very narrow, big live drum room though, which was amazing. So that really helped with the tracks. I don't think, like, really, first time, it was exciting, but I was more like, oh, yeah, sick, the songs and all that. I think really studio, like, I think it was the first time we pretty much went away recording was the first time I looked at a studio was like, oh, okay, this is cool.
Mm.
You're in some pretty special rooms here. And we were very lucky as a band to... Obviously, it's our money at the end of the day because we did record deals and, you know, at the back end of that, you're always going to be paying for it. It's not just free money. But we've taken experiences in our lives and it's been one of the best things ever. Like, you know, we made our third album, Sinners Never Sleep, with Garth Richardson. Mm. So we went out over to America and that was where I think just seeing vintage gear. We were at Sunset Sound.
Yeah.
So a pretty legendary place as well. And you're
always wanted to go there.
Yeah. So, you know, at this point, I went to college and there was all like production and stuff in that. But I was more focused on the band side of it at first. And I would say later on, as the years of music I've been in, I've got more interested into that side of the world.
So what was the first producer, would you say, experience you had?
So first producer experience, I would say, with John Mitchell and Matt O'Grady. Outhouse.
Mm.
There was definitely like writing and rewriting parts and like kind of improving sections and learning, like, you know, sometimes a producer can come in and he's not trying to change your songs, he's just trying to make them lock in more.
Yeah,
as right. Well, so it's kind of like not being overprotective, because you know what it can be like sometimes. Like, we write something, we're like, this is it, and it's, you don't want to be closed-minded, I would say.
I think it's a skill in itself to be able to adapt your mind, to be able to, even when you fall in love with something and you're very like confident in that idea, to be able to relinquish a little bit of that trust to somebody else and know that they could bring something else to the party.
Yeah.
And I think it's an ability that you have to nurture, because it's not a natural thing, I think, to start with, is it?
It's kind of like sharing as well. And I think that's why I've been very lucky to do what I've done in You, Me at Six, because it's been, you know, nearly 20 years of doing it with pretty much the same guys,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Minus maybe the, like, from the early days, we had a couple of different people, but, you know, it really kind of started off in 2007 with You, Me, and just went bang straight away. So, you know, having that time and that bond with people, you're understanding, you're learning, you're growing your craft together.
Mm.
We're all trying to better each other and just be like, right, yeah, what can we do next? How can we improve this? And, you know, I think, you know, we've done, like I said, we've worked with John Mitchell and Matt O'Grady and kind of doing a little bit of pre-pro. Garth Richardson was the first time we properly went in for a pre-pro session where we rented out a studio for 3-4 days and we looked at all the songs and we tore them back and changed parts again, like in a proper production, like,
yeah,
pre-pro,
yeah,
state. And that was cool to experience that, you know, like, that was the first time, oh, wow, we're really going into these songs and locking in our parts. And it was the same with Neil Avron as well when we did our fourth record with him. We did that for a longer time then. That was, I think, a week or 2 weeks we did our whole record pre-pro and we're just in a practice room. And you're getting all this knowledge and advice and seeing how producers work and how they hear your music.
Yeah.
And they've got special ears as well. And I think it's collaboration. It's also the exciting thing. Music is to be shared.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's... when I work with other bands as well, I get something from them in terms of you suddenly see how another writer thinks, another musician thinks, and you start seeing a pattern and you appreciate that that's not the way you think, but you really like how they're thinking and you get their train of thought, even though it's not your own.
Yeah.
And I think when you work with quite a few people over the years, you pull all these little aspects and you put them into your own pot, don't you?
Exactly. You're learning from people. It's like... You know, I never went to university. I did secondary school into college, which was a music college for 2 years. Things started picking up after the first year. They gave me all the things I need to do to pass college while still being on tour. You know, so it's getting to the point where you're like, your education never stops as a musician or a producer or a writer or a mixer. You never sit back and go, oh yeah, I'm really good now.
Yeah, right.
Because I think the minute you do that, you're like, well... You're shutting off ideas. It's kind of like, I just don't think it's good for growth, especially. You're always learning. Things are always evolving, and it's always good to learn from people. Oh, how did you do that? Oh, like, you listen to a record. Well, musically, how do they do that? Or they're really cool chords. Or production-wise, like, how did he make that sound happen like that? If it's, like, jittery or stuttery, like, always question. And you're always trialing as well. You're always trying to make that sound so you can understand how that has been done.
Mm.
So I think that's... I definitely got... That's, I think, mid-20s, I would say, is where my mind was really opened then to music. And I was like, this is really kind of what I want to do. You know, it's all I've done, you know. And I think it's taken it slow and steady, but songwriting has also helped me to get into production.
Yeah, so when I mean, you know, you are getting well into your production now and... What was the point that you kind of found yourself going, I want to attain these new skills? I don't want to just sit on the back at the studio and the couch watching an engineer do stuff. I want to, like, what's he doing there? How's he, what is he doing with a patch bay? That was my first question. I was like, I want to know if I can work all that, I'll look really clever.
Yeah, it's a minefield for people that don't know what they're doing with a patch bay. Especially if you go into a studio and they've got it all set up and you're like, well, I don't know the room.
Yeah,
so
right.
So what am I pulling out? Like, as long as it's all labelled up fine and you understand where things are being routed to, great. You know, but I'm just at the early days. You know what I mean? I don't think I'm any good at it yet. I've just kind of done it because of writing songs for Yumi at Six and doing my own productions and helping myself with the song to... when I'm at home writing on my own or if I've got somebody else from the band over or an artist or a friend, you know, I just sit behind the computer to start building up a vibe and get in a little world.
Were you weren't doing that at 16, though, were
no,
you?
No, I wasn't doing that at 16, no. I wasn't doing that at 16. I was started about 20, I think it was like 25.
Yeah,
I started to be, okay, cool, like, we've done a record. This is
so nearly 10 years of being an artist, you suddenly went, okay, yeah, I think I need this under my belt.
Yeah, well, just like, it was something that I saw, and I was just like, well, if you can record songs and you know how to do it, that's a great way to have demos and show it to people.
Yeah.
Because I was using whatever, like a phone recording, old iPhone recordings, going into a practice room. I've got this idea, and then play it on the guitar, and we're all jam out, and... You know, you can actually go in with a presented idea and watching some of these producers kind of taking our songs from the ground up or, you know, if there was any backing tracks or people started working on things, it's like, well, I want to be doing that.
Yeah.
I want to be getting ready for things. I want to be building a world and creating something I've written but present it in the best way possible because you can then hear it with clarity and you can show direction and it might get other people excited. So... I think it was more for like the sound design thing of things as well, like the additional production. Oh, you can do a mellotron or you can do some strings or you can make a chop, like a hip hop kind of thing. There's so many samples out there now as well that you can just throw yourself into recording music and making music and get lost for hours and come away and going, oh my God, I've been doing this for 4 hours. Oh, this is a cool, really cool vibe here.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just banking ideas and challenging the writing side from a new angle.
So did you like, it's almost like, I think for me personally, I see the, when a guitar band particularly starts embracing a recording on their computers and the laptops and things like that,
mm-hmm.
it usually incorporates a lot more electronic influences in their music. And effectively, when you you master a DAW, you effectively learn a new instrument in a band in these modern days. Like when I was a kid, you know, Tuesday night, you go to band practice, you take your amp, you take your pedals in a rucksack, and you take your guitar.
It's mad, isn't it?
And now it's like, there's at least one person in every band, teenage band, that will go and you'll take a laptop with Logic on and you'll record a little bit in your rehearsal or whatever like that. And I think invariably it has changed a lot of music, full stop, the shape of music, the initial idea to be able to record on a laptop has kind of influenced music a lot. And is that when the more electronic side came into Yumi at Six?
Oh, definitely.
When you all started making your own demos and...
I remember it's like, I think a few of us definitely dabble. I think Dan and myself kind of spurred each other on. And Dan's really good. You know, I always think drummers, for some reason, they're very good at DAWs and being a producer and being an engineer.
And programming.
They're very good at doing it. I don't know if it's just me who thinks that, but I've seen it with a few people. So I'm like, okay, like... They are the backbone of the band.
Yeah.
You know, they are like the glue that keeps everything together. So it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you guys were making Six here, Invader, I don't think I ever saw the room without you and Dan in there.
Yeah.
And Dan Austin, of course.
Austin, we obviously got to give a massive shout out to.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was really exciting because we got to work with Austin once before here. And we worked with him when he was with Gil Norton doing The Swarm, and it was the first time we, as a band, and the first ever artist in the world to write a song for a roller coaster ride for Thorpe Park. And that was a really, I think, you know, accolade to fame almost in a way, because you think, oh, it's Aerosmith in America, but no, they worked the roller coaster around the song where we wrote the music for the roller coaster.
Yeah.
It was a really special time and learned a lot from him as well. He, like, people work hard. It's like you have to get up and do it day after day, kind of get the mold into the mind. It's the same as songwriting. It's like keep the tap running.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, cause if you stop and like the ideas kind of soak away almost.
Yeah, that is, do you know what? I really like that, keep the tap running. I think with writing, that's very much... the key to it, and that's what I would say to anybody. So what these days, what rig do you have? What is your rig in terms of your recording rig?
So for home writing sessions with other artists, I try to take, which is my live rig now, is just my Neural Quad Cortex DSP, because I've profiled my amplifiers that I was using live and I would use in studios to record music with. Profile them so amazingly, so I get to travel around with it in a smaller box and take that anywhere with me with my amp sounds. I use my pedal board, which I use a Gig Rig. G3 is like my hub, and then I've got, you know, a mixture of overdrives and distortion and fuzz pedals, you know. I've got some Strymon stuff for the modulation side and delay side. I've got a few, like a POG and a bass synth, like the micro bass synth on my board. I use a TC Electronics Hall of Fame, just easy to get down, twist a couple of knobs, get really great reverb sound out of it. This has been my board for essentially anywhere between 8 to 10 years now.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of my sound. That's why I like my pedal board, is I can take it anywhere with me and I know what I'm doing. I like the sounds on my board.
So you don't work in the box much?
If I'm doing guitar stuff, I try not to do stuff in the box, because the quad cortex is fantastic and it's my amps and there's my pedal board in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get my tone into the computer straight away, which is the best side of that.
Yeah.
You know, but if I was to go in for an album recording or a single recording, you have the luxury of a big studio, I would still use real amps and I would use the quad cortex in the mixer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have like 2 amps or 3 amps and then a quad cortex, you know, to give a different flavor. So that's like the core base of it. That's how I get my sound. And then guitar wise, you know, I've got my Fender Telecaster. It's a custom shop, I think. Yeah, from 1987. So it's it was a 30-year reissue, which I got in 2017, 2018. And it's been a workhorse, and it just sounds amazing. And it's just my trusty guitar that I know how to make it work really well. And it's given me a lot of joy. So they're the three things I take to a writing session, if I can.
And your recording rig's Logic?
And my recording rig is Logic, yeah. I have got Ableton as well, but I'm just trying to, it's quite a minefield. It's like the back to front version of Logic. So I think that's also one thing I would like to improve on is my my work rate in different DAWs. I got to know Logic for a long time and know how it works. Could still improve as well. Still a lot to learn from it, but I think if I could be diverse and learn why other DAWs are good as well, then adds a string to the bow.
Do you use Pro Tools a bit?
We used Pro Tools as Umeet 6 very early back in the day. Dan had the studio there and we were running off that, and I wasn't in control of it then, so no, I don't. And it's a studio standard as well.
Yeah.
Which I know, and it's just like, it should be the one I should learn.
I was on Logic. Vader was on Logic for years. Like, all the Enemy stuff was done on Logic, and it was only when I went residential and then had to have a Pro Tools rig in Vader.
Yeah.
And then I just kept looking at it and this expense that I wasn't using. And I was like, I got to use this. I got to learn. I've got to, yeah. I got to change. And yeah, when did I change to Pro Tools? About 2013, I think.
Yeah.
I still think I was faster back in the day on Logic. I don't think I've ever got up to Logic speed on Pro Tools for some reason, but it's because I'm getting older.
No, I don't know about that. Nah, that's a lot of nonsense.
But, no, so how come you're also thinking of Ableton? I suppose that's because of the more dancey stuff you do as well.
There's more things you can do with Ableton and some of the routing as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pretty cool system. I've been working with some people who've used it and they use the push as well, so it can all link up really well. So
the only time I've ever used it was in a live application.
Yeah.
And because that's pretty standard.
Yeah, I've seen people do that in live.
Yumi don't use that live.
No, we don't use that live, no. We use a... It's an old piece of kit called a U-Track that we put all our, like our multi-tracks, our stems from the songs that have added instrumentation. So we kind of build sets from the start. Before we go into tour, we get the set list. Then we start working out which songs blend together so they can be one full song, but it's like three songs in one click track, how it flows. So, it's been good to us and it's definitely kept us tighter. You know, we do all play to a click track. I like to have the tracks in my ears. I like to have my in-ear mixes like an album.
Yeah,
it's
got
that live feeling to it as well.
I think it's good when you're, as an artist, if you're used to in-ears, then when you go in the studio, it becomes less like being in the studio when you're tracking.
Yeah.
I find that with a lot of artists that, if you know, they turn up with their own in-ears, you can bet your bottom dollar they'll just get into the groove a lot quicker because everything sounds just normal, doesn't it?
Exactly. And it just, even for a live experience, just look how far things have come. Let's just say it like that.
Yeah,
like,
right.
How far technology's come that we can do that now, and it can, like, your live show is improved and it's enhanced.
Well,
you know, there's obviously some amazing, like, look, I saw Queens of Stones at the back end of last year and they're phenomenal. Not really anything on tracks. It's like they're doing the synth work and all that, but like, it's just a live sound coming from them, which is, you know, they're one of my favourite bands and they are just a wall of sound, which is fantastic. But they've got that real old school, like, right, yeah, we're just going to fucking play.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I think it's definitely the modern, I don't want to say modern generation, but definitely in the last 5-10 years, I think live shows have all improved because of the technology and how people can record and what they use now with their tracks moving into live.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's that, it's, you know, the electronic thing came into play and it's just evolved and it's created an entire new genre.
Yeah.
It's funny. I mean, if you look at metal, for example, you know, 25-30 years ago, and you look at the market leaders now, you know, you look at somebody like Bring Me. I mean, the way in which they've embraced technology into their production and kind of reinvented the wheel in rock music. It says, I think it's
amazing,
proved,
isn't it?
It proves the point. Yeah, it is. It really is. And I mean, the Sonics as well.
Yeah.
You know, Sonics now that that is just almost like a standard, a given.
Is there anybody that you've worked with, Matt, that has like inspired you? You know, people that you've been lucky enough to work with, like in your career? Have there been producers or artists or anybody that's made you think, you know, well, that's really good? And, you know, like you're learning a lot from them, or you see something they do and you're like, that's genius. And I've got
all of them.
Yeah.
All of them, pretty much. I mean, there are key people. I mean, I think Dan Austin had a big influence on me, and because of his approach.
Yeah.
He's so stylistic in his sound that you wouldn't emulate that. But it's his thinking process. It's how he will look at something and the way he goes about it, and his work ethic.
Yeah.
First time I met Dan Austin, it made me feel lazy.
Yeah.
And I was putting in the hours.
Dan's a beast.
He is. He works incredibly hard. But and you know, there's a lot of producers that come through Vader that they're all very, very different. You know, like Jason Perry is quite different to a lot of the other producers that come through here. I love how he sort of approaches things. He's like really...
Never had the pleasure of working with Jason. I've met him a few times. He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, and he's got such a great energy. You know, you literally can feel the passion in the room with him. And when he's doing vocals, he likes to be right next to the singer. And yeah, he's kind of getting into it. And there's
the true hype man, the true hype
massively
man.
So, and you can hear it in his records. His records have got this stunning energy. It's always really coherent with him. So, I mean, obviously, with a lot of the producers that are in here, when they're working, I'm not, and I can't go and say, "Oh, can I come and sit and watch you for a bit?"
but you can hear what's going on.
Though, yeah, right? Sometimes I'll sneak in for a little bit, and you know, but I think that's the thing, as you said earlier, there's so much learning to be done, and everybody has a different thing to bring to the table. Everybody has their thing. I mean, if all producers were the same, then there'd just be one producer, wouldn't there?
Yeah. But some people have their own chains, and they've got their own mixing buses, templates, and they've got all their favourite sounds they go to. Delay throws, you know, like some people don't like to do delay. They're just kind of more reverb. Like, there's a lot of, you can create so many great sounds in so many different ways. And what a compliment is when somebody goes to you and you go, "How did you do that?"
Yeah, I love
that. "How did you do that?"
And I go, "I'm not telling you."
No, that's my secret. Yeah. No. And I think that's definitely what's exciting as well from my side, wanting to learn more about production. There's a lot more out there to watch now. There's a lot more to view. You know, you can see, like, if you use YouTube, or, you know, there's lots of different engineering websites like ProMix. Is it PureMix or ProMix? I think it's PureMix. And then like Mix of the Masters, you know, you can, if you're really interested to learn about how people do things, you do have that advantage. But I think the best place for people to do is just get something like a Logic, and it's got all the stock plugins, so you don't have to spend any money, and you can just learn how each thing actually works.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you watch those Mixed with the Masters and stuff, and they are really interesting, and they can be quite inspiring. But the key to that is that you're looking at something that's already been done.
Yeah.
And it's like they've done it. Yeah. So it's like, okay, learn how to do that, but you're not going to bring anything exciting new to the table.
Yeah, but it's learning the skill.
Yeah.
It's learning how to do it. Because then once you've got it, you might do it on a record a year later. It doesn't have to be the in sound. You've learned a trick.
Yeah.
It's like you're like an encyclopedia when you do music, I think, is when you learn new tricks of, like, when you're making songs, like we were making a song earlier today, Matt and myself, and it's just like, how do you do the turnarounds that are coming out the chorus? How can you make things unique? What things drop in and out? And, like, what's just the groove? Like, it's so fun. And that's why I say it's endless. And I think the best songs do kind of just come from going in, building the ground from level one. When you write a song with a producer, an artist, you know, you can have a first variation of it, but if you've got a great song that you keep going to, you go, right, how do we make it even better? And like, you're always just kind of layering. It's a layer cake, you know. What I mean, and that's the exciting thing I find about recording and what producers do, is seeing it from that inception, from like a demo idea into a full record stage. And obviously the mix is a big part of that as well. And, you know, there's some people that do mixes, they mix and produce your record, or some people just produce your record and then you get a different mixer on, we've had a few different variations, and they're both really great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, when we worked on Night People, Jakir King, you know, an amazing producer, wanted to produce and engineer the record with his team, and then we got Andrew Sheps to mix and master, to mix our record.
I didn't know he mixed that.
Yeah, Andrew Sheps mixed our fifth record. So, you know, and you can hear it. It was like somebody coming in with fresh ears.
Yeah, which is, yeah, yeah.
You know, sometimes it works right. I think it works really well on that record. Sometimes it doesn't, you know. So that's part of the journey of music and how people hear things. And
yeah.
You know, especially being in a band and hearing different mixes do one song. That's a really interesting thing. You get different flavours.
Yeah.
It's like salt and pepper. Is it like, do you want a bit of seasoning with that as well? Like there's everybody's got their own flavour. That's what I really like about it.
That stumbles into the controversial territory of spec mixes that a lot of people are moaning about. I don't mix. I don't really get involved with that because it just fries my mind.
We've only done it like a couple of times.
But it's funny, like a lot of people, I mean, funny enough, Andrew Sheps, I think, said recently on a podcast that he just simply doesn't do it.
No.
It's like, you know, I mean, I wouldn't ask Andrew Sheps for a spec mix.
Yeah, you wouldn't ask him for a spec mix. You ask him to do a mix.
Yeah,
you
right. Know what and, I mean? And pay him.
Yeah, and you're going to pay him for his work because he's an amazing mixer.
Exactly.
You know, and we have done that before. We have paid mixers to do it and we haven't quite landed it. You know what I mean? So that's not a bad thing. Doesn't mean that... especially when you're in a band, it's the five band members. I can only say that from my side is one fifth of you, me at six. That's my experience of it. We kind of decide the end product, but I don't know what it's like if it's a major record label thing and like loads of people are getting involved on the song as well. So
I think it's just tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, you know, most people are going to put in a couple of days on a mix, couple of days. I know some people do it less, but you know,
everybody's got their way of working,
and it's. You do that and you don't get paid, you know, you sort of might get paid.
Yeah, it's not fair, is it? Like
no.
If you're going to do work, you should pay for it.
I think so. But yeah, I just thought I'd bring that one
yeah,
up.
Yeah, no, it's interesting.
It does come up.
I think it's a conversation that, you know, people don't like to have that conversation.
No.
It's not an easy conversation to have, is it?
It's not, and I can sit in my ivory tower because I don't mix. So I can talk about it and it doesn't affect me. So it's not like, oh, the spec mixes are going to stop rolling in for me now.
But some days you shoot and score, some days you don't. And it's just like you shouldn't let that bring you down, I think.
No.
And that's the one thing I've learned from this is sometimes not every song is going to be the song that makes a record.
No.
But if you build a collection... And you just keep, like I say, like you work on your chops, you're playing every day, you're doing recording, you're gathering like a snapshot of your life. That's what I quite enjoy as well.
Yeah.
You can hear and be like, oh, actually, like a year or so ago, I was really into delays and I was doing loads of that and making swirly riffs. And
I've been listening to that record.
Exactly. And inspired by the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so well, like when you are making a record, when you're actually... In the environment, I know you've made records all over the world in loads of different studios. Well, what's the one common ground that you've got in terms of your environment and how you like to fulfill your working method in the studio? Like, you know,
it changes. It depends on what state music's in. You know. You can be really prepared. Like, that's why pre-pro is so good. You can go in there, have all the ideas. You're ready to just go in and lock in and play. I like sometimes the free approach because you just don't know what's going to happen. I think studio magic can really happen where you just do something that just unlocks to a new world.
I think you're probably quite fortunate to be able to do that because you're in a band that is so tight as a unit, musically as well as friendships, that you can rely on that and the magic will happen. And I think in this day and age, like with younger bands, they have so little time to make a record anyway. Mm-hmm. And they've probably only known each other for like 2-3 years a lot of the time.
Yeah. It's you've got to be smart with it.
Yeah.
And obviously studio time is not the cheapest thing.
No.
You know, so that's the joy of the laptops and having demos now, isn't it?
When was the last time you went in with a little bit of chance then?
Sucker Punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went into Sucker Punch and we had a few songs ready. Like, we had Beautiful Way in the bag. We had Adrenaline as a demo format that was worked with a couple of writers, John Maguire and Corey Sanders, who are legends. I'm trying to think what else was ready for that record. Kill the Mood was ready for that record. We had a song called Finish What I Started, which actually we recorded here at Vader.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That was meant to be for the album Six, but we kept it back because we didn't get it right, but we knew there was a really good song there. So, you know, not everything you record comes out straight away. Sometimes you need to sit back and take time to think about it, or, you know, when it fits right.
Yeah. So you've never, I mean, even now, like... would you say that you, according to the project, you will always probably change the shape of your environment? You wouldn't stick to a concept? Some people do. Mm. Some people are like really... I mean, I suppose I am to a certain degree, but I'm here. I'm always in this studio, so I don't move around.
I wouldn't say like concept, really. I think it's just always when you're in the studio working hard, always trying to make sure you got the best part played well. Does it go... If you've not got the sound right, you know, you go back in and keep attacking the song and not let it get you down. Like,
you don't give up, do you? You don't kind of settle for stuff.
No, I don't settle. I think you've seen it as well when we're recording What's It Like Here.
Yeah.
And the piano part, like the arpeggio piano part, I think you saw me in the main room at the studio, literally for an hour and a half, just playing it, just trying to get it down while everybody's having dinner and all that. And it's... because I want the aesthetic to be right.
Yeah.
You know when you can hear something that's going to be really good, like, you push yourself. And that's what's great about music again. Like, there's no end. There's no end line. There is always just, I think, more. There's always more to learn, always another trick to do, another way to write a new chord progression, or, like, you unlock yourself into a different world. And I think that state is one of the best things about music is... I feel free. I feel like mindless.
So maybe like having that kind of, oh, well, when I'm in the studio, I like to be like this. I like to live like this. I like to work in this routine. It kind of does take away a bit of that freedom. Hmm. And you have all that freedom of that, like, well, who knows what this one's going to be like, which is kind of cool. Because some people are very methodical.
Yeah, an earlier song for Yumi at Six, Stay With Me. You know, I thought there was something good in that song, but some other people didn't think there was. And, you know, I didn't know where it was going to go. I thought it was a good song that was going to make the record, but I didn't expect it to be the song it became, you know. And when, like, everybody puts their parts on it, I think Josh really embodied that one when he did that song vocally. It took it to a different level. Mm. And that's when you get really excited. And, you know, I remember it when we were doing our last record, Truth Decay, and the first song we recorded was Deep Cuts. And it's the first song on the record. And I remember after the first two or three days when we got to a good level for playback in the room, we're all just jumping up and down with excitement like kids.
Yeah.
Being like, oh, my God, yeah, we haven't fluffed this one. Like, just being ecstatic with the work you've done. And that's why you make music at the end of the day. And this is quite a selfish way of looking at it, but I think Rick Rubin says it all the time. It's not for the fans. You make art for you.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's like, if it makes you happy, if it hits that itch that you like, you know, of music and the vibe, we just try and be our favourite band, or just try and push sounds in different ways that things that inspire us come in, but because it's us five and we've played for so long, we have a way of playing it. Mm. We've got our own version of that. So that's what I love about that.
Yeah, I think that's really wise. But it's very hard when... you've got sort of executives around you talking about playlists and radio airplay and it to shut out all of that noise. But at the same time, I think it's really important, you know, because it's very... I was talking to George Perks about this the other day. We were both talking about the importance of that. We love the phrase, stay in your lane. You know, it's such a cliche, but I think it is really important. And like you say, the Rick Rubin thing, the way he describes it is like, it should be made for you.
Yeah.
And then if other people love it, then that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, the whole keeping it wide open. I might start experimenting now.
Yeah, it's all
right. Start doing some sessions where I literally haven't got any idea what I'm doing.
Well, it's like, it's just for me, from being in a band for so long, I like just writing music. So it's nice to be versatile. It's nice to do different sounds and different flavors of, you know, I would probably be mostly known for rock pop music, you know, but I've been able to venture out and make, you know, over the last few years, drum and bass with friends,
hip hop,
R&B, like alternative, like indie, like more soundscapey stuff. And that's really fun because if you like music, you want to learn how to do all that, because there'll be a point that it comes where you're maybe making a song with an artist or you're writing a song in your life and you've got all this knowledge. Oh, could play it in a different style. You know, what would it be like if you changed the BPM? What if you changed the key of the song? You know, you start writing an idea. Let's move it a semitone up. Let's move it a semitone down. You know, like what sounds best for the vocalist in the room. Like that's what is I've enjoyed about making music over the last few years, is not being worried. Like I said, being free. It's just whatever's good will be used. What's not good won't be used. Yeah. And there's always a relevance, and it's another way to lead to a next song.
Don't be scared of writing something that's not great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If it's in you, you've got to get it out of you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, move on. Keep on trucking.
Yeah, man. Keep on trucking. With the writing side of things, do you be prepared? Do you go in with preparation with that? Or do you just go in sort of with a vibe?
Yes, I change. Yeah. I'm quite fast. Sometimes I'm going into the session with a few chord ideas or a progression or a lick or something to just have in the back, just in case. Mm. Because when you meet somebody, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm. So it's always nice to have something in the arsenal if the day's not going good.
Yeah.
You know, if you need something to kind of throw out or be like, okay, cool, I can keep bringing an energy, like, see which one connects.
Yeah.
So some days you go into a studio writing session, you spend all day working on one song, or you might spend two, three hours on one song and move on to another one, and then move on to another one. So you're like, one day you could have three ideas going about, and you're like, which one's the best one? Which one do we gravitate towards more?
So if you're at home,
yes,
on your laptop, rig, Logic, open, writing for stuff that's come in.
Yeah.
Do you have method there, or is that just like whatever on the day?
Yeah, again? There's definitely method, I would say, behind it. If you're doing something for pitch work, there's going to be a reference, so it's nice to go and listen. And if the song's major or minor,
you know. But you've got your little process on that one.
I keep my eye. I always look if there's a reference. It's nice to go in, know what tempo it's at. If it's, because it's digesting a song. If you're like, oh, I would love to make a song like Tame Impala. All right, go and listen to a load of Tame Impala songs. What's kind of the grooves? What's the tempo at? What sounds they're using? Is there something that sticks all the time? So you're listening to the reference. Or if it's like, I love this guitar riff from this song, Blackbird, for instance, an iconic riff. It's because it's the boom, boom, boom. It's got a movement and then it hangs and it's changing and then staying steady on one note. I think it's like a G, like the G major when it gets up to the top bit. So it's just always having a vision in mind. I try to anyway. Sometimes it works. Sometimes maybe good. Sometimes maybe shit.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to beat myself up over it, because so that's just the way it is sometimes. You don't have amazing days every day.
No.
And when it does happen and you start getting into a little bit of a rut, take a little bit of time out.
I get these horrible 6 weeks. They're always 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Of not being able to write anything half decent.
Yeah.
And it just destroys my soul. And every time I just think, oh, that's done then.
You can overthink music, really, can't you?
I've been trying to find the pattern and I don't quite know what it is. It just happens. And then I almost like look at the calendar and go, oh, my 6 weeks nearly up. And then I'll go in and I'll write and be like, that's all right, that is, we're back.
It's coming back with things with fresh ears, isn't it?
I don't know. I cannot work out what this 6 week malarkey is. I just honestly can't. It doesn't happen in producer world.
No.
I don't have like 6 weeks every now and again where I'm just off the boil.
Yeah, duffing it, yeah.
I was like, oh, I can't seem to do this job. I've got no ideas. But in the writing, I get these like little patches probably twice a year.
Yeah.
They're always 6 weeks long.
This is where your body's probably saying to you, you need to walk away from music for a bit and go and live some life. Go and do things. And experience some new things. Yeah. Walk away from this environment for
go
a bit.
Go outside.
Yeah. Go recharge. Go and get some vitamin D.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But no, I mean, I'm quite... I think even if I did go into other studios, I'm quite methodical because I think it's a thing of trust. And I guess my environment is always going to be different. The band I'm working with is going to be different.
So what's your ideal recording environment, Matt?
For me, kind of how I work it. I like I'm an early riser. I like to get in early. Usually I like to have tracked some vocals the night before that I then just edit together in the morning before the band gets up.
Mm-hmm.
And the singer isn't listening to every single line of every single take as I'm comping, going, it's like, okay, you didn't sing every right line, great. You know,
that's part of a comp, right?
Yeah, right.
That's the most difficult one for people, I think, vocal comping. I know some of our lot from UMI at Six are like, all right, he's vocal comping, right?
I can't
be in here anymore. Yeah. This is where I call time out. And I'm like, I find it interesting. I sit in with Dan Austin, we've made records here, Matt, and I'm watching him do it. And it is like it's an art. It really is a special art to go through vocal comping and just building the puzzle.
It's one of my favourite things. Vocals are my favourite thing. I remember the very first time George and I worked together and I'd done a load of tracking of this vocal and then I'd comped it and then it needed a bit of Melodyne. And then he goes, oh, do you want to give me the hard drive and I'll Melodyne those vocals? And I was like, no, I'll do it. I love it.
Yeah.
And he went, ha, 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 ha. And I went to go and get the hard drive and I was like, no, I really love it. that's my morning thing as well with my cup of tea.
Yeah.
8:30 in the morning. That's me. A couple of hours on that. And then the band walk in and there's the vocals are sounding spot on.
Yeah.
And things are really, it's the cohesive thing, isn't it? It's
when it starts locking in, right? Yeah. That's a special feeling when it starts happening.
And it gets everybody into a vibe and it's a good start to the day. And then you carry on with the rest of the day. And then chances are at the end of that day, I'll go and do just a couple of hours or an hour and a half with the vocals in the evening. And then I continue that process. And that's, because I get in quite early, I usually work till about 10
so what time would you say what's early then, Matt? What time will you be getting into the studio?
Probably be turning on the gear at 8.
Yeah, okay.
Just because I just know the band won't be up then.
You get a few hours to go through everything and keep a bit of housekeeping, right?
Yeah, and just get comfy for the day and do my own prep so I don't have again that thing like we were saying. Most people in bands can work at DAW, so they do look over your shoulder a lot more and they do say, oh, what are you doing?
Asking questions.
And it's like, I'm just doing something. I know what I'm doing. It's all fine. It's not going to shock you. It's not going to upset you.
Yeah.
And that sometimes when you have to, it's nothing against the bands. It's great that they're interested, but it's sometimes when you have to stop and explain and you're losing minutes.
You lose the rhythm.
And I just like to do that first couple of hours on my own. And then the rest of it, I sort of think, right, by 2 o'clock, I want to get those guitars done.
Yeah.
And then by 3 o'clock, we'll do that. And then we'll get onto the bass there. And then we'll do that. And then so I kind of know what I'm aiming for.
Do you, everybody does different ways. We've done it this way as well, where you make a song where it just goes from drums then into bass, then you build the song up one song and then you move to another one.
Yeah.
Or you do like all drums at the start of a session and all that, and then the drummer goes out. There's different ways. I prefer doing it song, build up the song. I love the song by song process.
I like song by song.
I think the minute that happened for the first time when we started recording that way, all the songs got so much attention. They got the right detail.
Yeah.
They got the care.
Yeah.
They got the love.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you're blasting through your bits.
Next, and, bass.
You could be a bit
bass,
more creative and find environments and worlds to live in, which, you know, such an amazing way to record. Again, it is an expensive way of doing things, but if you can do it like that way, you know.
Again, I'm really lucky. I mean, at the beginning of a session, I build the room. So I kind of get the drum set up. I'll get the backline mic'd up. I'll have a vocal booth set up. Keyboards if they need it, bass rig, etc. So we can flit around anytime, right down to the point where, you know, we can be doing playback when the song is finished, and the bass player goes, I played a B there and I shouldn't have done. You know, and they're like, oh, I want to play that there. It's like, all right, then just quickly go in and do it. That's a luxury here because we've got the channels and we've got the mics. And I spent years of like, you know, you finish the drums and then you have to take a few mics off the drum kit to use on the back line and, and you have and to remember where everything was. And like, so I totally know I'm very, very spoilt here. And
we've worked for that. I think it's not to be spoilt. I think it's we've worked hard. So I think you see people and there's a lot of people in music and you're in it because you love it and you work hard towards it. You know what I mean? Like, we don't just kind of bumble through it. It's just like we're very passionate people about what we do.
Yeah.
And we want to deliver the best products.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that, and that's it. It's like, that's why we all have this kindred and that's why we all get on, because it's this, it's a shared passion, isn't it? That's it's more than a job.
Yeah, it's way more than a job. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle and it's a world that you live in.
Very much so, especially me, like 24/7 living with bands.
But like, look at the amazing thing that Vader's brought though. And this is why I think this podcast is going to be so exciting. The confessions, you know, is that you've got a lot of people coming through here and you get to meet some amazing people. And I'm sure you've made some really good friends from the people. Like, we wouldn't know each other if it wasn't for recording our album Six here.
Yeah.
And we've stayed in touch and we had a friendship. And it's just like, you know, to be able to do this and we're writing some music and hanging out as mates is, aren't we lucky to be able to do that as well?
It's the best job in the world.
Yeah.
It is the best job in the world. But I mean, there are the tough moments. So, yeah, what like, what's your pretty much worst studio moment?
Recording or writing? Does it have to be? Just is it like
probably recording?
Recording has been. Actually, there was when we were recording "Sinners Never Sleep." There was a song, "A Little Bit of Truth," and I was really struggling to play the part. And somebody else, the guitar tech Dave, I think, who was on that record. He played the part instead. And I remember that being a real hard thing. That was a real hard thing to swallow, man. As being the musician who writes it and you haven't been able to properly track it. So that kind of made me want to be better.
Yeah, well, and, fair play to you.
You know, like, it shouldn't be a negative thing. It's, I can play the song now. But you know what I mean? That. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's one of those, it's like, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to just give up. But that's where I've got my hunger for it from, is, you know, when you've made something and you've not been able to play it.
But again,
that's a tough thing. That's an ego. That's a real ego check, that.
Well, it's your theme, I think, on this chat that we've had, is like, you just want more. You want to learn more. You want to get more from yourself, and I think that is probably the only way to kind of to move forward in this area of the music industry. You know, you have to really want that from yourself, to push it as a producer, to push it as a writer, because it's judgment every single day.
Look, of course. Look, I'll be honest. I don't think I'll be the world's greatest producer, but I can write a song on a laptop and I can get a general vibe going. Can I get it to Spotify ready? Not right now, but that's like my goal for the next 5 years, is to really improve in that side of the world. I want to be making records, you know. I want to be able to be a producer for other people and give my guidance for somebody if it's the right fit, or we connect as human beings. It's being able to know I've had those experiences and seen how records are made in studios.
Yeah.
You know, and when great songs coming together and what tones need to happen. I love that. And, you know, I want to be able to do that and be able to sit behind the computer and record and engineer it. And
well, I mean, all the producers that you've worked with, the huge array, all the things that you've learned from them, I mean, that in itself is, you've been there, you've experienced it, you know. So that, I think that does qualify you as a producer. That and your songwriting as well. They do tie in very much.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's all valuable assets that you've gained over the years, which kind of completes the man, as it were. So I think there's one, you've already told me a You Me at Six story, which I absolutely love. And I don't know whether it's that, because I want to ask you about the funniest time and the funniest story in the studio. But I don't know, knowing you lot, I think there's probably quite a few.
There's definitely been a few. Nothing like outrageous.
No.
It's, you know, when we're in a special moment, I'll be real, when we're in Blackbird working with Jakir King, and he decides to do live in time mix on the desk of one of our songs, and we're all in sitting there smoking some weed and having some red wine and just watching this Grammy Award winner doing it. It was just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah.
We're in Blackbird Studio D watching Jakir King live mix our song. Like, this is pretty wild.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely been some special moments. We, like you said, we've been to Thailand. We've been to Nashville, LA. Last one was Santorini. We've tried to live the life, and it's moments, and they're things I think the greatest things I'll look back on in my life is the moments I've been able to make records of You, Me at Six so far and where it's taken us, and to share those experiences with people. Mm. You know, Vader here, we hadn't recorded a record in the UK since Hold Me Down. So that was 2009. And we come back here to Vader after being away for so long. It was a breath of fresh air. The country air was here. The manor.
Not you know, quite the climate, though.
No, but. No, but that was, you know, we've had the climates in other places, but this was a very homely and snug environment.
Yeah.
It was a warm, like a, you can feel that cold English vibe through it as well. Like,
yeah.
It's got the live feel, man, and I love the live room here. It's an amazing sounding room. It sounds amazing on drums.
Yeah.
Like, drums just sound outrageous here.
Yeah, it's funny. You can really hear the room on certain on certain records.
Every room, man, they've got their characters, and Vader's got his own character.
Yeah. Well, I listened to Six the other day, and it brought back such great memories.
Yeah,
I remember like walking past the room and hearing certain moments, and
it was one of the times where our bands changed kind of sound as well. It was very alternative pop, and there were a couple of moodier ones on the record, you know, but. That kind of that bombastic sound of the room really came through on the record.
Yeah.
I think you can hear, especially on that record, I think a song like Predictable was like, you could really hear like the room of a drum. It's just like, it's a special place, man. And, you know, we've made What's It Like Here as well. Like,
yeah.
Which is an amazing song. It goes down amazingly live.
Possibly one of my favourite Yumi songs, actually.
It's very different as well. It's not your conventional rock song, is it? It's more like a dance formatted thing. Low verse. Climax, pre-chorus, fat drop chorus. Like, eat, sleep, repeat. You know what I mean? So, yeah, and it's, that's, you know, being adventurous again, trying new things.
Yeah.
Not everything's going to be a Picasso, right? So don't, you can try and keep aiming for it or just enjoy what you're making. That's like the creative freedom of art, is you don't know what you're going to make. It just comes out of you.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why you've got an array of best moments in the studio and in your career, because you've kept that open mind.
Mate, the Stardog days here, man. The Stardog days.
Well, that's for another conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, mate, it's been awesome having you on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure, man.
Thank you so much.
Hopefully the pilot goes well. Hopefully people go, you know what? That was a really interesting conversation, actually.
Yeah, well,
I've enjoyed my time with my cup of tea here.
Yeah. Well, it's been really, really lovely to have you. And hopefully see you very soon.
Matt, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for having me. And this has been my confession.